Well, summer has arrived, and that means our insect world is in full gear. And so we thought it good time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible tonight by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dr. Burden, glad to have you back with us again.
It's always my pleasure, Bill.
So this has been a busy month for photographs. We have had a lot of photographs that have been sent in. And I even got some off of Facebook from a friend of mine who lives over in East Texas. We're going to start out. By the way, all of these photos are on our website on the post for What's Bugging You. Just click on that post and you can follow along with us. And she took some fabulous shots of this first one, which is a bug with a very white kind of crown almost on it. And then I'm not sure what the color is in the background, but it's not white.
Yeah, this is a very interesting photograph. And what it is it's an Arctid moth in the family of Arctidae. Sometimes they're called leopard moths because they have spots on them. This one is white with them black ringed spots on it. And then you can see the abdomen underneath that part. This is a situation where the moth was either in the process of unfurling its wings. They actually pipe insect blood into the veins of the wings to get them to spread out. And sometimes nature makes mistakes and something doesn't work as well as it should be. And so it might be that it tried to unveil its wings and it just got stuck along the way. If it's in the process, it'll probably be okay. If it's not in the process, it'll be fodder for somebody. Some predator will get them because they don't have their defense of flying away. They're very beautiful moths. They're mid-sized moths and very, very common around here as well.
So in this photo, it actually looks almost like a beetle or something like that, but the white part is the wings that are that are theoretically unfurling. So.
That's right. Their blood is called hemolymph, and they'll use basically hydraulic pressure to pump that blood into the veins of the wings, and then the wings will spread out. And even then, they have to harden a little bit before they're functional.
And I was watching a documentary not too long ago, and it was about a specific binome or biological, ecological area, and they showed this process of a moth, literally pumping the blood through its wings, and it took hours,
this
moth to open up its wings and then fly off. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight with your questions about our insect world at 800-552-8502. Now, do these moths feed on anything in our area that could be destructive, or are they just a nice, pleasant
Well, the caterpillars little... sometimes are destructive because the caterpillars of moths have chewing mouth parts, so they can chew up the plants. But the adults only have siphoning mouth parts, so they'll take nectar only. And normally they're not at a pest status.
So
but
actually,
the immatures are.
So they could actually be, in the pollination business. They're useful in that. So
Yes.
So plant some plants that they like to eat, and then you'll have some good pollinators later on. So,
but don't be disappointed when your plants are eaten up then.
Well, yeah, that's the person. It's like planting grass for a cow. You expect the cow to eat the grass. So our next photograph is more of a beetle-type creature. It's a very dark black creature, and it's the second in line on our website if you'd like to go and follow along. And what kind of a, is this a beetle, and what kind of a beetle is
it? It is a beetle. You can always tell beetles because their wings will come together in a straight line right down their back. If you see that, it's a beetle. This is actually one of the larger beetles that we have in the Arctotex area. Most of them are maybe an inch to an inch and a half in length, and they are in the family Passalidae, but one of their common names, depending on what geographical area you're in, some people call these the patent leather beetles because they have that shiny black.
Right.
They are normally found in rotten logs, and this is unusual for beetles. They tend to be kind of pseudo-social. They're not true social like ants and bees are, But normally when you find one, you'll find many of them. And they're just a great natural part of the ecosystem where they basically feed on things that feed on decaying logs.
And are they harmful, helpful, or are they useful?
They're helpful. They're very beneficial to the ecosystem. And even though they have mandibles, they're not aggressive. I love these guys. They're just so spectacular when you see them. You don't expect something this big to be crawling out of a log.
Right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. We have a couple of more online pictures to go through, and then we're going to get with Clyde from Nacogdoches. Now, this little creature in this photograph is red and black and almost looks furry. So it looks kind of like it could be a rather dangerous little or pesky little critter.
Well, in Mother Nature, red and black, are, especially when they're combined together, are warning colors. And so anytime you see red and black, you should be careful. The common name for this is a velvet ant. It has, you know, a red head and then a black thorax and then another red part to its abdomen. And it does look like it's velvety, like you said, very smooth and hairy. Even though they're called a velvet ant, they are actually a wingless female wasp.
Uh-huh.
And their exoskeleton is extremely hard. Even if you try to step on them in regular soil, they'll just get up and walk more. You literally have to get them between your foot and a like a sidewalk. But just leave them alone. They have a very, very bad stinger. The stinger of these, I've dissected the stinger of these out, and they are at least 50 to 60% of their body length. Mm. And so they're not aggressive. I've stood there and watched many of them. But now, if you see the female, you might look around. The males actually have wings, and they also look very similar to the females, but not quite as robust. They're a little bit smaller.
And so those are ones that you don't necessarily want to smack when they're up
on
you.
No, people, around here, they're also called cow killers, because supposedly their stinger is so bad they could kill a cow. But that's not true. Just they're predators. They're down there eating whatever they can find. And I think these are one of the most beautiful insects we have in this area.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist tonight, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call with your question about our insect world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to save these other two photographs in case we have a lull in the storm. And right now we're going to go to our first caller, Clyde from Nacogdoches. Clyde, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Well, thank you very much for taking the call. I always, or my wife and I both always really enjoy the show. But I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's probably related to our rather mild winter, but we have been having an absolute plague of huge roaches who seem to get in. They're probably, an inch and a half long. Mostly I've always heard them called wood roaches, but and usually don't see them in the house much, but we've been seeing a lot of them in the house, you know, lately.
Clyde, roaches come in three sizes, small, medium, and large. It's the small ones that are really detrimental, especially if they invade your house, something like the German cockroach.
We've got those, and we fight them constantly.
Yes, and you can always tell a German cockroach because it'll have stripes right behind its head. Right behind the head of a cockroach, and you can't really see their head, is called a space called a pronotum. It's a rounded area. The medium ones normally don't have fully developed wings, and a lot of people call these water bugs, especially down in the southeastern part of the United States, more so than like in Florida and Georgia, Alabama. What you've described is going to be either the American cockroach or the smoky brown cockroach. And you said that they're very dark, and so I'm going to assume that what you have is the smoky brown that goes under the name of wood cockroaches. Now, what I would do if it was my house, I would go down to the store and buy something that's called boric acid. And you sprinkle a little boric acid along your doorways. And anywhere that you can see light coming through, a cockroach can squeeze through. They're like liquid. They can just get as small and fit into almost any space.
Right. Yeah.
They'll pick this boric acid up on their legs and antenna. And it's safe for dogs and children, as long as they don't sit there and really eat it. Exposure, is it harmful?
How about cats?
Gosh, if I had cats, I would expect them to eat the roach. I think it would be okay for cats. Dogs right. and cats. And what it does is it acts like little glass crystals, and when it gets into their stomach, it literally cuts open their digestive system, and they'll die, not right away, but that's what I would do if it was my house.
Okay, well that's good. These guys are they're a darkish brown, yeah.
Yeah. But if the spot behind the head is completely brown, then it's a smoky brown. If it has a light-colored peripheral, then it's the American cockroach, and that one does like to live with humans. Most of the time, the wood cockroaches, and I don't think it would be the mild winter. I actually think it would be at the amount of rain that we've been having is driving them into upper, higher ground.
I can accept that.
They don't carry any diseases. They're not going to transmit any disease.
When we spot one in the house, they're obstrusive.
Yeah, you don't want cockroaches in your house.
Don't like anything like that. No, not even a little bit.
And then you if you don't want to use the boric acid, just keep the can of regular Raid insecticide handy and shoot them with that.
We do that, and if we spot one, we spray it. I would really prefer. I was just curious as to which variety they were more mm-hmm. than anything else, because I don't usually see them much in the house.
What's amazing is that people don't realize that there are, especially here in the Arklatooks area, there's probably close to 50 different species of cockroaches, yet only a small handful will live with humans. I don't know what that says about humans and cockroaches, but only a small handful will take up residence with us.
How about that? One other question. I saw a critter the other day, and I assume it was some kind of a beetle. It was probably an inch long, easily, rather slender, prominent thorax and head separation, and then a long abdomen with the wings, across it, black, except and with extremely long antenna back that were black and white striped. Any idea what that might have been?
Extremely black with long antenna.
Shiny black. I mean, yeah. Like a pair of spit shine boots.
Yeah, it may be the Pisalid beetle that we were talking about, except it doesn't normally have a real long antenna.
Oh, this guy had antenna that were almost as long as the rest of the beetle. Hmm.
Yeah, there is something that's called the longhorn wood boring beetle. And I have a suspicion that it was probably that, because their antenna can be normally greater than 50% or longer than the body. And that's what I think you're describing, and not a species that I would recognize right off the hand. But all of the other details, go ahead and Google and look up longhorn wood-boring beetle. They're in the family Cerambycidae, and see if you can't find a match for it.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Clyde. I appreciate the call.
Thank you, Clyde. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have Walter on hold here for a few minutes. Walter, please stay with us. And we're going to go next to Susan from Shreveport. Susan, what's bugging you?
In years past, I have had to devise ways to keep the animal food that I leave out at night for cats and possums and whatnot. I've had to elevate the food so that the slugs didn't get into it. Last year and this year, I haven't seen any slugs. Now, I'm not fond of slugs, but I'm curious about where they've gone.
Well, as what has it been? Slugs like it moist but not wet. And so I have no idea where they've gone. I would be more suspicious that there might be something there eating the slugs that have found out that that's where they're at. And But slugs are harmless. If you want to keep in the future, if this happens again, Susan, what I would suggest that you do is go down to a plant nursery area and get something that's called dichotomous earth. And basically, it's ground up lava-like structures. And when these slugs crawl across it to get to the animal food, it literally works like knives, and it just cuts up their belly. And you'll soon not have a problem with slugs. So I'm glad you don't have a problem with slugs, and thank you for feeding the stray animals. That's nice.
Thank you.
Dichotomous earth.
Thank you for calling, Susan. And you are listening to What's Bugging You right now with your resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go to Walter next, and then Gail, you're on hold for a few minutes. Please stay with us. Walter from Marshall, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, first on the slugs, if you put a bottle cap out with beer, mayonnaise jar top, and beer, they get drunk, fall in, and drown.
Yeah, that's another way. But you know, since she's feeding dogs and cats and possums, I the worst thing you can have in your life is a drunk possum in your backyard.
Yeah, you don't want that.
But you're absolutely true. A lot of people put out a little bowl of beer and they'll crawl up in there and die very happy.
We've got a massive flea infestation.
Oh my gosh!
Mites. How do you get rid of them little suckers the best way?
So
weeder.
With fleas, are they in the yard or are they in the house?
They're everywhere.
Okay. There are some sprays that you can use for fleas. And if you're worried about your, do you have pets, dogs and cats?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's an application that you can put on the dogs and cats that basically works like a birth control to the fleas. And the problem with fleas is that their immatures don't look like fleas. Their immatures are kind of like grubs, and they'll live anywhere that the pet lives, and like in the dog houses and cat houses and such. But if you have a massive infestation, I would almost likely just spray my yard good with something like malathione or 7, liquid 7. Mm-hmm. And then with the house, the key to controlling them in the house is to vacuum, vacuum, vacuum. And then don't leave your vacuum bag, or if you have a bagless vacuum, empty it right away into something that you can seal off. Another trick that you can use, and you can put down, especially if it's in an area that you don't use a lot, like you have a storage area, put down rock salt and leave that rock salt in the carpeting for a few days. It will dehydrate and kill the fleas, and then you just vacuum that up, and then you vacuum up the fleas. But you have to be diligent. You have to.
Okay.
And the thing about it is that the fleas are often attracted to warmth and movement. And so the best way to monitor fleas is to walk around your house with a pair of white socks on, and especially long socks. And the first time you may have a dozen on there. The next time it should be getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so that's a good way to monitor for fleas. Yeah, I didn't know that Wally and I had a flea problem until both of our cats passed away. And then they stopped feeding on the cats and they started feeding on me.
If you want to trap for them, a Christmas tree light over a bowl of water with a little bit of soap in it, they jump towards the light, and then they fall in the water and drown.
I haven't heard that, but I don't doubt that it works at all. I mean, I think that would be certainly worth a try, and I will steal that idea from you, Walter. Thank you.
I'm going to try a flame weeder. On gardening, you have a flame weeder. It's just a flame coming out there and just grows the entire yard with a flame.
That might be worth a try too, but if they get down close to the soil, then you're not going to kill them.
Yeah.
And no, so I would go with liquid 7.
Well, I'll give it a try then. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Walter.
All right, thank you, Walter. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 with your question about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly. That's 800-552-8502. Paul, you are on hold for a couple of minutes. We've got to go to Gail next. Gail from Marshall, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I've been gone for a week. I haven't stirred my compost bin. I opened it up, and it is full of maggots. Can I put diaphanous earth in it? Because I've got some. I'm turning it as we speak and being horrified.
Well, you know, maggots will only live in very moist conditions.
And I wouldn't be so
upset with you having maggots in your compost pile, because they'll just add to the nutrients of the compost pile.
But they'll become flies, won't they?
And so what I would suggest you do is to open it up and let it dry out as much as possible. Put it in the sunniest part of the yard and let it dry. And you always know when the maggots are getting ready to pupate into flies, because they will crawl away. And so you want to make sure that you get them while they're contained in your compost barrel.
Okay.
I wouldn't put any insecticide in there. I would let Mother Nature and heat take care of the problem for me. Dry them out.
Okay. So go ahead and stir it and stir them up, and that'll help it dry out, I guess, because it's soaking wet in the bottom, and that's where they are.
Yep. They like that moisture. You got to dry them out. Keep turning it and drying it. Turn it and dry it. Turn it and dry it.
Thank you, because I can't garden without it, I'll tell you.
I understand. I got a compost pile of my own.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Gail. And you are listening to What's Bugging You Tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Ina from Vernon Parish, you are on hold for a couple of minutes. Please stay with us. But Paul from Natchitoches, you are on next. What's bugging you tonight, Paul?
Oh, hello. I might have something good to say about fire ants.
That'd be a rarity.
actually, they might be, in the future, maybe solve a major agricultural problem. I planted about, I'd say, 30 cucumber plants, and I didn't notice any bees or anything pollinating them. And I was wondering why they were all getting pollinated, and I looked closely, and it's because of fire ants. They were all going into all the blossoms, and they pollinated every one of them.
Well, you know, fire ants have been used as what we call biological control agents. There was a study done in the mid-1980s where I was at Texas A&M, and they were actually monitoring the number of fire ant mounds in cotton fields and correlating that with a decreased amount of boll weevil larvae and bollworms. And so they can be beneficial, and they're just not that mostly beneficial when they're in our front yards. But if they're pollinating, you know, that's great. I think that's great. A lot of people don't realize that there's a lot more pollinators out there than just bees.
Yeah.
Bees pollinate. Yeah. There are many beetles that pollinate. There are actually some moths that pollinate, and so we love our pollinators. The good story to share with this.
Well, maybe if all the bees and everything die out, we'll be shipping fire ants around to orchardists.
I hope the bees don't die out. You know, that's a little known fact about the honeybee. The honeybee is not native to North America. They actually brought it in when they settled Jamestown.
Yeah.
Just a little trivia.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your call, Paul.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You bet.
Okay.
And yet that invasive species of the bees gave us Tupelo honey. So I'm not complaining, because I love Tupelo honey. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, is welcome. We've got Justin on hold from Kilgore. Please stay with us for a few minutes, Justin. We've got to go next to Ina from Vernon Parish. Ina, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm going to be for some of these little creepy crawlies. When we got the fire ants, I have total woods. I don't have lawns, gardens. I have total woods right up to my door. When we got the fire ants, we stopped having hardly any ticks. When we kill all the slugs, we stop having fireflies. That's the primary food for immature firefly, for lightning bugs. So we need to be careful about killing off a whole species of anything.
I agree. Everything needs to be in balance.
Right. So I let the slugs do what they do. I let the fire ants do what they do. I try not to bother them. But so far, it's worked out pretty good.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about with Paul on how fire ants can be, and ants in general, can be beneficial to the ecosystem in many, many ways. And as are the slugs. People just don't like slugs because they destroy their nice hostas and their ornamental plants.
But
that's only going to be
they don't bother.
Exactly. And I hear a lot of stuff about why do we not see the fireflies anymore? What's happened to the fireflies? And it's just a matter of urbanization,
right.
You know, urban sprawl. You get out into the country, mm-hmm. especially in the country where they don't spray a lot of insecticides, the fire ants are there. Mm-hmm. They're doing very well. They've just changed. They just moved further into the country as urbanization has moved into their territory.
Right. I grew up without fire ants, so when we moved back here and we had them, I was just totally surprised.
Exactly. Thank you for your call, Ina.
Well, thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call with your question about our insect world tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go next to Justin from Kilgore. Justin, what's bugging you tonight?
A question regarding an insect that I have noticed this year that I haven't seemed to notice in the past. It's a tiny, translucent, almost neon green shaped insect that looks exactly like a grasshopper. But they're very, very tiny, maybe a quarter to a half inch in length. And I've just never seemed to notice them before, and they're all in my truck, and they're everywhere outside, and I was just wondering what those may be.
My first gut feeling, Justin, is that they're something that we call a tree cricket. They're very pale green. They do have the hind legs like a grasshopper, because grasshoppers and crickets are very closely related, and they feed on foliage, so if you park your truck underneath a tree or something, which is what we like to do in the South to keep it a little bit cooler, it might be that. So that would be my first gut. So Google up tree crickets. They're very, you would never even think they were a cricket, but they are. And so that just may be what's going on with that. Okay?
Yeah, and when I'm looking at their back end there, they have these three little hair-like expenditures there coming off the back end. And as I'm sitting here looking at it, I think the way you described it is exactly what that may be.
Yeah, people normally don't notice it, but there are extensions to the tip of the abdomen in grasshoppers, katydids, and crickets. They're called cerci.
Awesome. Well, I have one more question,
sure,
if you don't mind. We, this year in our home garden, we planted 15 plants, a mixture of we did yellow squash, and then we also did zucchini. And the reason I planted so many for such a small family is that in years past, we've been fighting squash vine borers. And we would have this beautiful harvest. It would start up early, and then all of a sudden, the plant would exhibit symptoms of dying foliage, and then it would just taper off to nothing. And so this year, I planted excess with the hope that the vine borers would get a few, but we would be left with still a few plants. And I was amazed that on a 5-acre property, these little moths seem to find the one spot where I have these plants, and they always are so invasive. Is there anything I can do going forward and in the future to prevent this?
That's a problem that I don't have an answer for at this time. The problem with squash vine borer, the adults look like small moths but with clear wings, and they bore into the vines exactly the way they're described. And if you spray them with insecticide, then they're protected in the vine. And so the insecticide never really reaches them. The only thing to do, would maybe you might try a soil drench. The active chemical is imidacloprid. Imidacloprid. And it will be taken up by the roots and spread throughout all of the tissue. I don't know if imidacloprid would be okay for squash or not, so do some research on that before you do that. And the problem with squash vine borer is once you realize that there's a problem, it's too late. And,
yeah, and I even went in there and almost performed a surgery using a technique I'd seen posted on YouTube where you actually slice into the vine itself and you remove the little grub. And I did that, and I packed it back full of dirt, and it seemed to be okay, and it survived the procedure. Lo and behold, 2 weeks later, it was infested again.
Right.
It was like a continuous cycle.
It is. It is. I will, Bill, let me do some research on this and let you post it on the on the internet. And because it's the time of the year where we're going to be getting a lot of squash pine borers, and if we had that on the internet, on the webpage, and that's going to be on www.redriverradio.org. And I, every time I tell myself to do more research on squash vine borer, and then I forget because I don't grow squashes. But and they'll get in pumpkins, they'll get anything that's in the squash family, gourds, anything. They're just terrible. Just terrible. Good luck with that, Justin. I like the idea of planting more as a way of being tolerant, but it seems like to me, and the reason that they find where you plant the squash is because they are cueing off volatile gas signals given off by the plants. They can literally smell squash, and then that's where they go.
Well, that's what amazed me. You know, we have several things planted all throughout our 5-acre property, and I was speaking with my wife about it, and I said, how in the world do these little insects we consider dumb somehow find this one plant that they're named after and attack it? You know, it just seems...
Insects are little machines, and they're stimulus response. Smell the plant, go lay eggs on the plant. And, you know, that's the way insects are. They're amazing.
I see why you study them. They're pretty amazing.
They are. I every day I learn something new, all the time. I get something that's called entomology today, and there was something in there. I was telling Bill that there may be a new pest of sweet gum trees. Some people might think that's a good thing, but sweet gum trees are a significant percentage of the hardwood lumbering business, especially in the Florida and the Gulf states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But in an urban situation, they're almost like a nuisance tree. I'm sorry, go ahead, Justin.
If you don't mind, I have one further question, and this may seem a little bit idiotic, but another previous caller mentioned flies and so on and so forth. I have noticed anytime you have a bag of trash or even a trash can that's outside, you'll have a swarm of your normal, you know, everyday fly. But there always seem to be this one massive fly that is 4 to 5 times, it seems, to be larger than the other flies that seems to propagate around that same area. And I was always, growing up, was taught that they were horse flies. Is it the same species, or what is going on there with that massive fly?
Yeah, horse flies are the largest fly in the fly group that we have in this area. And they're probably one of the more nuisance ones because they have an extremely painful bite. Horseflies feed on blood. And so they're not feeding on the other flies, but they may be just in that area because they might think other animals might come into that area as well. Yes, flies come in all sizes and varieties. It's next to the beetles, it's the most diverse group of insects that we have.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help and your insight, and I appreciate it very much.
No problem.
You too. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502 tonight. That's 800-552-8502. We've got Judy and Robert on hold right now, but we've got a photograph from our website we want to get to. This woman had sent this in to us, and it looks like an infestation. These are small, what looks like base black critters, but with stripes all over them and a very round kind of almost beer barrel. You remember those old candies, the beer barrels, all kind of a shape like that to their abdomen. What kind of an infestation is this?
These, their proper name are called sosids, but their common names are called book lice or wood lice, although they're nothing, they're not lice at all in the sense
not
that most
like
people...
Not like body lice, yeah.
Not like body lice. And they primarily feed on fungus and mold. And when the lady sent this picture in, she said that they were around her wooden tree set.
Swing set.
Swing set. And what they would be doing there, I have no idea. Because they, unless there was some mold or some fungus on the tree. But a lot of insects have what we call an aggregation pheromone, and these are immatures. Once they mature, they'll have wings, and you won't be able to see the striped part mm-hmm. of their abdomen. And when I looked at this picture, I was a little taken aback because I wouldn't expect them to be on a swing set. But the more I looked at it, if you look completely down on some of them, they have something that looks like a fat lip. Mm-hmm. And in entomology, we call that part of the face, the clypeus. And so they have very long antenna. Really interesting. Great photograph.
Yeah, she great took photograph. A great photograph. And this photograph, by the way, is on our website on the post for What's Bugging You, so you can follow along.
And one of the reasons that they're called bark lice is that they like to get underneath the bark of trees. And the reason they're called book lice, we all know that if you get a book wet, then only mold and fungus is going to follow. And so they'll attack the books that are moldy.
Well, now, how about silverfish? They attack books, too, don't they?
They do, but only old ones. Let me tell you a story about silverfish. A lot of people don't even realize silverfish are insects. And there's some will argue that they're not, but I'm old school, and I was taught that they were insects, and I believe in my heart that they're insects. But silverfish like to eat starchy products. And back in the old days, Bill, you remember cardboard boxes?
Mm-hmm.
Today we use synthetic glue, but back then they used starch glue, starch-based glue. And they were in there eating. I thought cockroaches just liked to live in my closet when I was a little girl and find out they were probably feeding off of the glue in the boxes Mom had stored in there.
Right. That's interesting because I had an old set of encyclopedias from the early 1900s. And every now and then you'll open up a set of pages and there's another dead silverfish stuck up in the paper.
Yeah, but they used to use the same starch base glue for binding books. And so hence book lice, again.
So librarians of old books have that problem then.
Yes, absolutely.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we still have time for your phone calls tonight. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Robert, you are on hold for a minute or two more, but we're going to go to Judy next from Angelina County, Texas. Judy, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I just heard your discussion about slugs and fireflies, and I just wanted to know, I have slugs in my house. How do I transport them nicely outside so that they can feed the fireflies so my grandchildren can hunt fireflies? And I'll take your answer off of here.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, Judy. Most people don't worry about transporting slugs, but I would like somehow try to get a piece of paper and just kind of slide it up underneath them very gently, and then just go ahead and just put that paper outside and put it in an area in which there's some high humidity, low sunlight, and they will probably crawl off the paper and go ahead and be where they need to be. I can guarantee you, slugs in your house, they're just lost. They do not want to be in your house unless you have low plants laying around that they could eat. But take a piece of paper, slide it underneath it, put it out in the right habitat.
And it's not like a slug can really run away from you.
No.
So you can get up to it. Unlike other insects, it can scurry away rather quickly.
Exactly.
So. All right, we're going to go next to Robert from Pineville. Robert, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, it's not bugging you, but when I heard about the squash stem borers, the solution that we used to use is that when the plant first sprouted, we wrapped newspaper around the stem, and that would keep the stem borers from being able to penetrate the stem, and that worked beautifully.
Yeah, it might work really nice when they're still seedlings, but they'll attack older plants as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
guys, we're talking about the squash plants.
Yeah,
squash
exactly.
But the other thing is when you talked about killing cockroaches with boric acid, one thing they use in apartments is you mix the boric acid with wheat flour and make a paste and put it into any crack that they can get through. This way they actually carry the wheat back to their nest and they'll eat that as well. And they'll die.
Yeah, I would just use the plain boric acid because now you're adding another ingredient. And sometimes when the boric acid gets wet, it loses some of its effectiveness. And so,
this is one thing they've used in New York, which everyone knows in the city, is known for their cockroaches.
Yeah,
right.
Very effective.
Yeah.
But anyway, the newspaper, because once the stent gets really large, the moss can't seem to penetrate it, you know, once the plants get very mature.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and we've used it in all of our gardens. You know, we used to live in Iowa.
Yeah.
We had plenty of plants, and it worked very, very well.
Sounds
okay.
Like a great research project for a grad student.
Or a science fair project.
Or a science fair project. There you go.
I just pass it on to you because, you know, we used to have a 70 by 100 foot garden. And
wow.
We do everything, and that really, you know.
That gives me another thing to look into. Thank you,
yeah.
Robert.
Okay, you have a great day.
All right, thank you, Robert. And you are listening to What's Bugging You tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question concerning our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, are welcome. The fiendish insects and the friendly insects, that is. And we've got one more caller online, and then all lines are open after that. George from Repeads Parish, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you? Hello, George?
Hello?
Yes, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
I'm a fisherman at heart, and I'm a brim fisherman, and I fish with crickets and worms and things like that. I'm also a bass fisherman. And I was just curious, whenever, I've always been told, whenever it rains a lot or there's a lot of kind of flash flooding kind of where the creek channels are, actually bugs kind of fall in or they get shot out to the lake and a lot of bass and brim feed on them. And then I also was told that when windstorms come around that they kind of get knocked out of trees and stuff. And I just didn't know if that was an old wives' tale or if it's actually, do bugs kind of get in trouble or out of their comfort zone when storms come through? Do they drown? And, you know, I know it's a big question, but essentially, are there more bugs after storms and things that are actually in the water at those times? And then my second question is, while I'm fishing for brim sometimes, there's wasps around. And I fish with my father, and when the wasps kind of, we knock a tree, he doesn't move at all. I panic, and of course they attack me, and he doesn't move, and he just kind of, they just don't bite him. And I'm just curious, what's the best way to kind of avoid getting bit by a wasp that you startle, besides the obvious, don't panic? And that's my two questions.
Okay, well, let's start off with the rain runoff and question. Absolutely. But at the same time, there might be more insects in the water, but their density is less because now there's more water. And so where you might have, you know, two or three insects per gallon of water, you're going to have two or three. You may have four or six insects per, you know, 2 gallons of water. So it's going to remain the same density. So I don't think it would influence the fishing that much at all. Now, as far as the wasp, that's a great question. Normally, wasps are not aggressive unless you threaten them. And then when you threaten them, then they become aggressive. Wasps do not bite, they sting. So you got to talk about the other end of the insect, rather than the mouth. A lot of people talk about fire ant bites too, but the fire ants will sting before they'll bite. Gosh, what can you do? I would have a big badminton racket next to me. You can whack them out of the air with that, you know. I keep a badminton racket. You can get them at garage sales all the time. And
well, honestly, when you bump them, sometimes they're startled and they kind of come on you. And my dad, he just kind of sits there and they just don't bother him. I'm running around like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, I didn't know. Do you go on the attack against them, or you just kind of just sit there?
Or get you one of those cans of wasp spray that can shoot 27 feet. You know, that's always good,
Lord.
Too. You know, I think I get the biggest humor out of people that use those. They are effective, though.
If you've got good aim.
Yeah. Then yeah, otherwise, you're just going to...
I'd be in the boat and all the fish, and I'd be running anyway. But thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Good advice.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Sounds like dealing with a wasp could be a zen experience if you can just mellow out and just let them be and they'll let you be. But
that's what I do.
Most of us can't do that.
I know.
So that's
I
the
know.
Unfortunate thing. Well, we're going to go. We've got one more caller online, Sylvia from Shreveport. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, I don't think chiggers are insects. I'm not sure. But we have lived on Cross Lake for about 18 years, and we cannot get rid of the chiggers. And we spray and spray and run a machine across our yard. We've done it three times this year, and I still have chiggers. Can you think of anything that's not just a commercial product that we might could use?
I would have to know exactly what products you were using, because insecticides come in three basic varieties. One variety, the chemical name, and you have to read the can and you have to read its active ingredient. The chemical name will end with the suffix THRIN. And these are called pyrethrins. And if you spray one pyrethrin and it doesn't work, if you spray another pyrethrin, then that's not going to work either, because they've developed resistance to that class of insecticides. The other class are organophosphates, and they're normally not used that much anymore. And then your third class are called carbaryls, and that's what's effective in 7-dust and in 7-liquid. And that's another thing. It may be the formulation that you're using. Are you using dust or are you using liquid? You said that you spray, so I assume that you might be using.
We've used liquids, and I see about 4 sacks of something that we put at the back of the lawnmower and drag along in a container to pour out on the ground. So I think we've used almost everything on the market that you can just get at one of the lawn services or Home Depot or somewhere.
The other thing about chiggers is the repellent DEET should work well with chiggers. And so, you know, you don't want to walk around your yard all the time wearing DEET. But if you know that you're going to be out, and they do like tall grass. And so, especially in near moist areas, if you have a bayou that runs through your neighborhood. And so keep the grass cut, vegetation down. And if you know you're going to be out there, wear some DEET. And you may have to end up calling and trying to use something professional. The weird thing about chiggers is a lot of people think that they burrow into your skin. They don't. They're surface feeders. But the itch is so bad that it feels like they're in there, because you see those little red dots.
Yes, I see them right now.
And so after they're feeding, they fall off. So normally by the time you're getting symptoms, the itchiness that just drives you crazy out of your mind feeling with chiggers, they're already fed and gone. And so you just need to treat the symptoms. A lot of people say, put fingernail polish on it and it will suffocate them. Well, they're not even there.
They're not there.
You know, and so, but good luck with that, Sylvia. Gosh.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I know I spent a lot of time going to folk festivals for campouts, and the first thing we would do is obviously rake our campsite. Then we would spray DEET on the ground before we'd ever pitch our tent as well.
Ah.
And that actually worked well, because ticks and chiggers were always a problem in these campgrounds.
Sure.
One, you get rid of the ground clutter, okay? Get rid of all the leaves and everything. Just bring a rake and clear out a section of about 4 foot around, a perimeter around where your tent will be as well. So it's a little bit of raking. But then you'll go through a whole can of DEET, you know, spraying the ground. But basically, it doesn't kill. It just drives them away. They just all move
away.
Leave. Now, that doesn't mean you might not get a tick sometime over the weekend, but it's not going to be an infestation like you would have normally if you're just camping on that kind of a surface. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Jill from Nacogdoches, you are on hold right now. Please stay with us. We've got to go to Michael next from Hallsville, Texas. Michael, what's bugging you?
Well, I had a question involving insect vision, and I was wondering if they see in different light spectrums, such as, like, instead of just visible light, do they see in the infrared, or do they by chance see in the ultraviolet, and how do they really navigate using light?
They see mainly UV light, especially those that pollinate the flowers, and the vision of most insects are extremely good, because they're composed of smaller facets called omatidia, And with fast-flying insects, there's something that's called the flash fusion. If you've ever been driving down a highway and you're driving really fast and the light poles that are posted, they just go boom, 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 like that, they can see at extremely high fusion frequency levels. And that's what makes them look like they can fly so accurately. And so and that gets me into insect flight, but that's not your question. I think they definitely can see dark light as far as the white light perspective is, but they're just their flight. I mean, their eyesight is just fascinating. It's just absolutely fascinating. Was there a particular insect that you noticed?
I really love physics and light.
Yeah.
So I just want to know how they work.
And I also tell you that wasps are very attracted to yellow. If you do have a wasp problem, and George, I hope you're still listening. This might help you. Take some yellow bowls, go down to your dollar store and buy a bunch of yellow bowls, put water in it, and then put some soap in it, and the wasps are attracted to that and they'll drown. And that may be a non-invasive way of taking care of the wasp population again. But yeah, the physics of insects is absolutely fascinating, especially their flight. Mm-hmm. Especially their flight, because some flight muscles just go up, down, up, down, up, down. But whereas, like in flies, they'll have yaw, they'll have pitch. It's amazing. Thank you for your call, Michael. Anything else?
I really just wanted to make a point to that. But I just was mosquitoes. I thought that was interesting how they fly, because it's not really up and down. It's like a circle, isn't it?
Yeah, mosquitoes aren't that great of flyers. They're too good at landing on me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still considered to be a fly, but yes, they do have a unique flying pattern to them. It's almost roller coaster like, but not completely up and down like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Great question. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Michael. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we still got some time for calls. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. Jill from Nacogdoches, you're online next. What's bugging you?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have large ants that are coming in through the faucet area and the tile in my bathtub. I think they're wood ants, and I think I might know where they're coming from. I put down boric acid, and that didn't seem to discourage them too much. And I hate to use poison, and I'd even like to be humane if I can, but I don't know how to get rid of them.
The only way that you can do that is just to plug up the entrance. And, I've heard of people going down to the store and getting Silly Putty or Play-Doh and plugging up where they can get into the house, and go to the outside of the house where your tub is located, next to the walls, and make sure that that's a clean area, that there's not a lot of vegetation there, because ants like to have things that's relatively moist, especially since they're coming in through the plumbing. Or if you don't want to use something like clay, then you can get this spray foam, and just go to the hardware store and get the spray foam, and you spray it in there, and then it hardens and it acts as a barrier to the ants. And make sure that you don't have any plumbing problems either, because they're being attracted into that water. We always see ants. I'm kind of curious that you're seeing ants this time of the year, because we normally don't have ant problems coming into the house until later in the summer, when things start to really dry out and we don't get the rainfall like we've been getting. So plug up the entrance.
I saw something online called, it had orange in it. I don't know if it's Orange Guard or it was supposed to be a natural product. Do you know anything about that?
It sounds to me like they're probably using citrus oils as a deterrent, and I'd have to see the actual product.
Okay.
Orange Guard, huh? I'm going to look that up.
All right.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. And we're going to go next to Ron from Atlanta, Texas. Ron, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Hello. I find wolf spiders interesting, and I'm kind of curious how they behave and what they're looking for. Or I'd like to make my house a little less hospitable to them, but I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit about them.
you know, I get these calls all the time, and I don't mind. And I think that's one reason that we started this program, just to help to educate the public. People call me all the time. They say, I've got this huge spider. I said, is it brown and hairy? Yes. Does it have stripes down its back? Yes. Then it's a wolf spider every time. And they're very aggressive ground predators. Another interesting thing about their biology is that the females will carry the young on her back until they reach a certain developmental stage. And if I had wolf spiders in my yard, I would leave them be, because they're taking care of the other bad, creepy crawlies. I made the mistake one time. I lived in a small apartment, and I saw a wolf spider in there, and I didn't really want to mess with it, so I just stomped on it, and all the little babies ran off the back. Now I've got, instead of dealing with one spider, I had about 15 to deal with. So I just leave them alone, unless they're in the house, and then you can capture them and export them outside, or use any method of extermination that you wish. But make sure it's not a female if you want to step on it. Yeah, they're just fantastic, fantastic spiders. They're one of my favorite groups, one of the more noticeable spiders because they are so large. Thank you for your call, yeah. Ron. It's glad to know that other people other than myself can appreciate the creepy crawlies.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Ron. And we're going to go next to Michelle from Natchitoches. I wanted to say Nacogdoches. Natchitoches. Michelle, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you? Hello, Michelle? Hello, Michelle? Okay, I think she is not hearing, so we're going to go next to Charles, I believe it is. No, this is Michelle. I'm sorry. Michelle, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I started talking last time. Here we go again. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I found these grubs, I suppose. I don't really know what classification they'd be under. In my compost bin, to where they started, and they are a dark gray, and they're segmented, kind of spiny on the sides, kind of a pinkish belly. And like I said, they started in my compost bin, and then I found them, which is far away from my house, then I found them near my house in my trash can, and then at another distance, I found them in one of my beehives, and they're just like keep spreading. I've never seen them before, and I don't normally have a problem with bugs, but these things.
Yeah, grubs are immatures of beetles, and they're going to lay their eggs and developing grubs, and anything that smells like it's decaying, because that's the kind of material that grubs like to eat. And again, everything's been, it's been so wet, that's probably why they seem to be spreading more and more and more. And so, but they're harmless, so I would just let them be part of the natural ecosystem, especially in your compost pile. They belong there.
Right, that's why I don't want to really kill them off, because I know that they typically are beneficial there, but like I said, I've never seen them before, and we have, besides, I don't know, June bugs, we don't really have beetles around here, and I didn't start seeing them until last year.
Well, the immatures of June beetles are grubs, and I have a sneaking fish that it is the June beetle grubs.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Thank
and,
you.
And those are dark gray?
Yeah. Gray whitish, yeah.
Mm. I'll look it up. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. And we appreciate everybody who's called in tonight. And Dr. Burden, again, I want to thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Bill. I love doing this because I never know what's coming.
Right, exactly. We always have some fun. You have been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS, on our program called What's Bugging You? She is our resident entomologist. And we'd like to thank each and every caller tonight. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burden, with assistance from Wally Derleth tonight, Henry Edwards, and Susan Bettinger and Tim Schnell. Dr. Burden is our expert entomologist, and you can reach her at our radio station at redriverradio.org and send in your photos of insects to us as well. Our next program will be Bird Calls on July 18th. We hope you'll tune in for that, and you are listening to What's Bugging You here from Red River Radio. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is next.